So, welcome to another episode of the Three Pillars of D&D Cast.
Hi!
I'm Jesse.
I'm Emma.
Meep! And that's Tyler, yep.
Name is... I can't think of a good name. Meep. My name is Meep.
Anyways, yeah. So, in this episode, we're going to discuss the new Unearthed Arcana releases that they've added.
D&D Beyond.
Yeah. Well, they're in general.
Oh.
They're offered by they're on the Wizards page and everything. They're on D&D Beyond right now, which is why we're able to use them and why we're going to
go over.
So they added a bunch of new ones just today that they were recording this. So we're going to go over those ones first, and then after we get done with those ones, we're going to go over the ones that should all be appearing in the Rented Sky for Ravenloft. So know that these are Unearthed Arcana. Things might change, but they've been doing. They've been keeping most of the things the way they were, so I don't expect that many changes, but you never know.
I'm excited for this one that we're going to go over.
So all these new fey, animal-related ones that we're going over, they're all going to have some very common things. They're all going to have ability score increases where you can have two of one ability, increase in one of another ability, or you can increase three different scores by one. All of them have most of them have an optional medium or small. If that's not the option, we will discuss, we'll bring that up in the specific one. And then they all have, languages that you can choose. I believe they're all one with the bonus language, like common and...
Yeah, common and
one other one. So if we don't mention those things, basically just assume that's what they are, alright? That way we can save some time and save some repetition here.
Us not being, like an hour on video? Never.
Okay.
Exactly, right? So...
For the ones that came out today, they're very, fey wild and mystical and, magical fairy tale. As so, let's start this off with the fairy.
The fey wild is home to many fantastic peoples, including fairies. Fairies are a wee folk, but not nearly as much so as their pixie and sprite friends. Infused with magic of the Feywild, fairies share a few commonalities with one another, but can differ widely in appearance, behavior, and attitude. Many fairies have a special physical characteristic that sets them apart from other creatures of their kind. For your fairy, roll on the fey characteristic table or choose an option from it. The Feywild is a wild place to come up with your own characteristics if none of these fit your character. So you roll a d8, and your characteristics are: you have small wings like those of an insect, you have shimmering, multicolored skin, you have exceptionally large ears,
a consistent, you didn't get it right either. It's a constant glittering mist around you.
I meant to say consistent.
A constant glaring mist surrounds you. You have a small special horn on your forehead, like a little unicorn horn. Your hands never look dirty. You smell like fresh brownies. A noticeable harmless chill surrounds you.
Also, why brownies? Why not like cookies?
Because brownies are awesome.
Well, brownies is a type of fairy, so I think it was kind of riff off of that. And so creature type on the fairy is fey, as opposed to humanoid.
The fairies are fey? I believe you.
There's a lot of fey-like creatures that use the humanoid character type, not fey, so it is good to specify it.
Yes.
The fairy, unlike most of the other ones, is only small. There is no medium-sized fairy. Speed is, your walking speed is 30 feet.
You have fairy flight, you have a flying speed equal to your walking speed, and you can hover. This flight is magical and does not require the use of your wings if you have them. I gonna mention on the if you have them part, because they did look at fairies and their lore, and not all fairies have wings.
Yeah, and I do like that they have some options here, because there are so many different fairy lores out there that you can go a lot of different places with fairy and the fae in general. So it's nice that they have the some flexibility built in here.
Yeah, because I think
from the get go,
Irish. There's some European lore about fairies. Those are pixies more.
Yeah, almost every culture has fairies.
Yeah, every culture has fairies. I think except for American culture has fairies.
Well, Americans don't have much of anything, but no, we don't.
We really don't.
We don't have. We're not our own culture. Things. Yeah. We're like a hodgepodge of a bunch of other things.
100 years old or something?
I understand American culture, but that's kind of...
I don't recall any... Fairies. They do have fairies?
They do.
Oh, okay. I recall mostly gods and stuff, but I wasn't sure if they had any fairies.
I think there's a few native tribes that have fairies, and I know this for sure.
Alright.
But I don't know which ones.
I don't know which ones they are, and... Yeah, if you know, let us know.
You know how druid craft and fairy fire spells. You can cast fairy fire attacks with any spell slot. You must finish a long rest before you can cast it this way again. You can also cast a spell using any spell slots you have. Your spell costs any ability for your spells, your choice, with intelligence, wisdom, or charisma.
I love that. I really wish that more racial stat blocks let you choose which... one you're using, especially since now we have that versatility with all the races. It's just, it's a better way of writing things, because it makes it so you can, I hate to say it, so you can maximize your character, but like, you kind of want to, right? I mean, if you're going to choose a cleric, you know what I mean, it's just not wisdom, or a druid.
Unless you're me.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you want to have that difference, because it's important. Because of your character's build, but if you don't and you just want to be able to use your stuff well, you should be able to, you know, have that build.
Yeah.
And our final ability for them is Fae Passage. You can squeeze through a space as narrow as 1 inch wide.
Now, does it mean that you are 1 inch? That just means you're able to like, shrink.
Well, which I like this as well. There's a lot of flavor and a lot of fairies. Maybe.
Also, you can basically actually get into anywhere as long as you have a drill.
Yeah, and if you're doing some kind of like, I don't know, like it makes me think of like Alice in Wonderland, how you had she had to eat a food or whatever to make herself.
She had to eat a cookie to make herself large and take a swig of, I think it was like represented by wine or something.
Yes, another food product.
Yeah. It would be like a cookie. Now, if you're going to eat a brownie, then go in.
Yeah. But either way, I like the idea that is you can just kind of squeeze through like a cat or something. Like, or like
What?
Okay. Because, you know.
Cats can squeeze through small areas.
They can.
It's like a cat. It's not even squeeze through a cat.
No, like a cat.
No, because, you know, prime example, Blizzard, you can't see on screen, posting a picture here on podcast. Go to our turn. Yeah, she's wide, but I've seen her go through the smallest spaces, like between a portrait and our wall, without knocking it over. I think, like, you know, making it bigger, the area bigger, but I've seen her fit through small spaces, and I'm like, oh, what magic do you have?
Yeah.
Are you a fairy?
But, like, at the same time, it doesn't give you, like, the unbalanced ability just to shrink to 1 inch whenever you want to. Just going through a passage, which is, you know, means something in Fae anyways. Passages are important.
Yes.
And you can just do it. It's cool, right? It's just, it adds a little something more to the fairy. Because you're supposed to be small, not tiny. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like that. Because if you were tiny, you'd do less damage. It's almost impossible to hit. But you'd also do so much less damage, it would be weird. So I like that they went with the small, and I like they do it this way.
Yeah, because you can't really make a Tinkerbell type character with it, because she's technically would be a tiny.
Yeah, but, you know, you can still make a bigger version of Tiki.
Yeah.
Girl. As, I mean, because a fairy artificer would be pretty fun. You know, because that's what Tinkerbell is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's...
If you're talking Peter Pan Tinkerbell, not at all. But if you're talking a reboot of Tinkerbell, yes.
Yeah, yeah, the newer Tinkerbell stuff. They don't do fairies as tiny, because they don't do anything really as tiny when it comes to fairy characteristics. Or large, in that regard, as well.
There's no large. That's which is sad.
Which is sad. But... Like, when you look at tiny creatures in the Monsters Manual, they tend to do, unless they're really powerful, like the fairy dragon or whatever, they tend to do like 1 point of damage per strike, and they have very low hit points and stuff like
they're
that.
They're like flies, mosquitoes.
Yeah, so it's not something you want as a character, because your power would be greatly reduced. So small is a much better way of putting it. I mean, 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet, you're still pretty small. If you want to make yourself tiny. Or as small, you're 5 feet by 5 feet on a grid, which just means you take up the space really well. So, let's move on from doing a fairy. Let's go to Hobgoblins of the Feywild. Hobgoblins trace their origins to the Feywild, where they first appeared with the Goblin and Bugbear kin. That history has left its mark. Though Hobgoblins are found throughout the Material Plane, they can channel an aspect of the Feywild's rule of reciprocity, which creates a mystical bond between the giver and the receiver of a gift. On some worlds, such bonds lead Hobgoblins to form communities with deep ties to each other. In the Forgotten Realms, vast Hobgoblin legions have emerged with ranks upon ranks of devoted soldiers noteworthy for how effective they are at fighting as a unit. Hobgoblins are generally taller than their goblin cousins, but not quite as big as bugbears. They have curved, pointed ears and noses that turn red or blue during displays of emotion.
That's
kind of a fun thing. So, like the other ones, they have the same ability score options.
Yeah.
Same with the language. Their creature type is humanoid, as opposed to fey. They're just a straight size medium. Your walking speed is 30 feet. You have dark vision of 60 feet. You have fey ancestry, which gives you that advantage on saving throws. You need to avoid or end the charm condition on yourself. And then you have fey gift. And this is what really makes the hobgoblin stand out. You can use this trait to take the help action as a bonus action, and you can do it a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus. You regain all expected uses when you finish a long rest. Starting at third level, choose one of the options below each time you take the help action, whether it's a bonus action or an action. Hospitality. You and the target of your help action each gain a number of temporary hit points equal to 1d6 plus your proficiency bonus.
Passage. You're in the target of your hop action. Each increase your walking speed by 10 feet until the end of your next turn.
Spite. Until the start of your next turn, the first time you're in the target of your hop action as hit a creature with an attack roll, that creature has disadvantage from the next attack roll that makes it within the next minute.
Fortunately, on the menu, if you miss with an attack roll or fail an ability check or a saving throw, you can draw on your monster. Reciprocity, each get a bonus to roll equal to the number of allies you see within 30 feet of you. Maximum bonus of 5+5. You use this trait number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and gain all the uses when you finish a long rest.
Yeah, which is nice, because I was thinking about it when I first listened to this. You get a real boost if, say, you only have a party of 2 people, because you're always using your help action with that one person. So, you can kind of really focus on them and do a lot of things. But this ability makes you want to have more people in your party as well. So, if you, for some reason, like, I don't know, you were in a campaign where it was just 2 people, you'd want to try to get, like, villagers to help you, or, you know, other people to help you here and there in combats, because it would, or with ability checks and stuff like that. it could help, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, while I don't generally try to encourage a DM to have extra, you know, NPCs, too many NPCs around, it can be helpful for the bugbear. Yeah. So that's kind of fun. So there's not a whole lot, I mean, just the help action in general, you know, lends itself to some social interaction and exploration bonuses, the fortune for the many, especially if you can help with an ability check. That can be really important when, you know, in social interaction situations quite a bit. Or a savings throw, I mean, you know, if you happen to be trying to dodge a trap or something, you can get an advantage from that there. The charms, the fake ancestry, that's definitely a social interaction kind of thing, because that's going to happen outside of combat, on top of in combat. So, I don't really like it if there's any other abilities that
fall into that.
Dark vision for exploration, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So then the next one
is the owl folk. So this is a kind of giant owls. Owl folk come in many shapes and sizes, from petite and fluffy to wide winged and majestic. Owl folk have arms and legs like other humanoids, as well as wings that extend from the back and shoulders. Because of their ancestral ties to Feywild, owl folk can innately see the magic of their surroundings. Like owls, owl folks are based with feathers that make no sound when they move or fly, make it easy for them to sneak up on you. In the library?
Yeah.
Your owl folk character might be natural, or perhaps your character is simply prone to rise later, buying the common name of Night Owl.
Makes sense. Ability scores still follow the rule.
Language, you're a humanoid, you get to choose between medium or small. Walking speed 30, dark vision 90 feet.
Wow.
And
then magic sight. Your keen senses can focus to see the presence of magic. You gain the ability to cast a detect magic spell, but only as a ritual. And your spell casting ability for the spell is your choice of intelligence, wisdom, or charisma. You can also cast this spell normally with any spell slot you have.
This is pretty good.
Nimble flight. Thanks to your wings, you have a flying speed equal to your walking speed. When you fall, you can use your reaction to make a dexterity saving throw, DC 10, to stop falling and fly in place to start the next turn. And silent feathers. You have proficiency in the stealth skill, which I like.
There we go.
That sounds a very good skill.
It is a very good skill.
I like this character concept, because it's not like when I see other, like, bird-type creatures where they just have a bird head. You can really make it so they just have the wings of an owl, and just the eyesight of an owl. And you can do a lot of different characterization, customizing, and things like that for this race, which I enjoy.
Yeah, and I don't feel like it's just, like, just a fly. Like, when I was the Eric Crockett, it just felt like, yay, I can fly.
Woo!
This feels more, I don't know, it feels a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the dark vision, having 90 feet, that's like a little extra thing. The stealth skill and the flying, all enough to make this a very good exploration character over anything else. Like, obviously, you can use flying in combat, why not? But
it can hit people with your wings for social interaction.
Yeah. And the magic sight just lends itself to a bunch of things. Like, so one thing we should point out with the magic sight is that, because we were confused, is you guess it's a ritual as often as you want to. But it's a ritual, so it takes like 10 minutes or
1 minute.
Us confused?
I know, right?
Routing across the wild, rabbit folk from the Feywild embody a spirit of freedom and travel. Rabbit folk are bipedal, and with the characteristic long feet of the animal they resemble and for variety of colors, they share the keen senses and powerful legs, or a leopard of creatures and are full of energy. Like a wound-up spring, rabbit folk are blessed with a little necessary luck, and they often find themselves a few fortunate feet away from dangers during adventures.
Alrighty. They got the typical ability scores, languages.
Language, they're human, annoyed, choose between medium or small.
Hair trigger. You add your proficiency bonus to your initiative rolls. That's just really good.
Oh, yeah.
Leperin senses. That's a weird word. I've never heard that before today.
What does leperin mean?
It probably means rabbit-like or hare-like. You have proficiency in the perception skill.
Yeah. There. It is, or something, a hair or hairs.
Leperin.
Also for eye.
Leperin. Leperin. There we go. Leperin. We're learning.
Learning new things, the more you know. Lucky footwork. When you fail a dexterity saving throw, you can use your reaction to roll a d4 and add it to the result, potentially turning the failure into a success.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that. Plus, it's just clever, lucky footwork. I like that. And then there's rabbit hop. Once during each of your turns, when you walk at least 5 feet, you can hop. Rolling a d12 and moving that many feet in a direction of your choice. This extra distance doesn't cost movement, but you can hop only if your speed isn't zero. So notice that's just once. Not once every 5 feet, but just once on each of your turns. So even if you dash as a bonus action, say you're a rogue, and use your movement, you're not going to be able to hop twice. It's just once a turn. But it also lets you hop in whatever direction you choose. So if you're trying to do that rabbit thing where you run and then you hop in the opposite direction to throw off the person pursuing you, you can do stuff like that. There's some advantages to that. We were talking about it earlier, and I think what I would probably do is if I was in combat, say, I just give the person an optional 5 or 10 feet, depending of movement, so it fits into your combat grid a little easier. And then I think I would basically say that whenever they do a jump, a distance jump, like horizontally, I'd add that d12. And if it was vertical, I'd probably add like a d3 or a d6.
That's d3.
So you're straight up height? Jumping?
Just do d4. Make it easy. Because no one has a d3.
Everyone has a d3. It's a d6 divided by 2.
Complicated.
A d4 would be easier, yeah. A d4 would be easier. So do a d4, and then, you know.
D3.
Do a d3. A d4 would be better. You should get that 1 to 4 range. That probably makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
That's probably what I'd do, but, you know, the left is obviously up to interpretation. The rabbit is. It has that extra perception. You have that extra luck. It makes it a pretty good exploration character, I think, as well.
Yeah, it really is.
It would also be great for combat or, dungeon running. Like, it gets extra initiative and that dex save.
Yeah. No, and like I said, that dex save is just wonderful. So, I like it. Now, I like this whole setup, all these new races. I feel like you can do more of a fey campaign in general. And I like that. And I like that these more animalistic builds make it so you if you have that dream of playing an anthropomorphic character and Dungeons and Dragons, you got cat people, you got rabbit people, you got owl people. Yeah. You have all the you have elephant people, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of animalistic races that you can do in D&D.
Planeshift as dog people.
See, there you go. Yeah, the planeshift, it's the Omnicat.
The Kenra.
The Kenra. Yeah. So they have some, so if you look for that planeshift document, you get the Kenra, which is, like you said, a dog people. Yeah.
Okay.
Or jackal, I think it's
jackal.
Yeah, dog or jackal. You know how you want to flavor it. But so you have a lot of options, and I think that's nice. I don't think everybody who plays Dungeons and Dragons necessarily wants to play a high fantasy elves and dwarves kind of Dungeons and Dragons.
I personally take dwarves and elves.
Yeah, so this gives you the option to not do those, and that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and you know, they have dragons, why not fairies? That's not fantastical medieval.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful that this means that there's going to be a future source book that has maybe the Feywild version of goblins and even bugbears, maybe. But especially goblins, I kind of expect to see goblins and kobolds. Fey versions, more of those.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even see some brownies or something like that. And of course, I fully expect there to be some kind of extra animal. I mean, we need some fox folk, you know?
Yeah!
What does the fox say? But
exactly why they haven't done a fox folk.
But, you know, like, I could see them adding some more animal ones and really hamming that whole thing up and giving a whole new kind of world to explore, even if they don't have a particular source book. But just usually these Ars Arcanas are a preamble to some kind of source
book. You know what I really want? I want a mouse folk or like a rat folk.
That would be interesting.
A rat folk seems likely.
Yeah, it seems pretty likely since I think they actually have monsters like that already, so.
Yeah, but I want one because it can little mouse ears. You can have a lot of different things that he said would make you food.
Exactly.
Which would mean that
and
he would be.
You can get a chef's hat and pull his hair and direct him on how to cook. It'll be great.
Other things.
Among other things that aren't copyrighted. So, either way, let's go to our break.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is
when they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like, don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
I don't happen to know where there's like secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.
You have what, minotaurs and satyrs? Oh, I forgot to mention, they got the elephant, they got the...
Yeah,
Leonin,
which are blind folk.
Yeah,
we have a few felines
already.
So
yeah, I mentioned that.
Those are felines.
And
we have the Yonties, and they're not good.
Yeah. So, yeah, the only thing that I know is we snake folk, so.
You said snack.
Snack folk, yeah. Oh, I'm going to be able to cut that in, or?
Oh, no, we're cutting that in.
Okay.
You can't stop us. Snacks.
All right.
Snacks. He said snacks.
All right, so anyway, let's do our break now, huh?
Wonderful. I need to check off the
list. Okay, so welcome to sellout time.
Yes, where we sell out.
It's the sellout corner.
No, we don't really have anything to sell out to, but hey, there we go. So, you know, if Hi. You want to get a hold of us, we have an email account, outdorkyfamily@gmail.com. We have our Twitter account is at our Dorky. And we have our Instagram account is at our Dorky Family. Use the hashtag Three Pillars Cast to talk about the show. Get the word spread out there. Share episodes, please. If you're, you know, especially on the YouTube.
On the
YouTube, yes, I said it.
He's talking like mom now.
Yeah, well.
On the TikTok.
We're not on the TikToks, but we are on the YouTube. But, so we have our channel there, too. So, if you're watching this on YouTube, then we do have it on up to 8 different podcast formats. So, I'm sure you can find one that you use, so.
And if you can't find it on what you use, please email us at ourdorkyfamily@gmail.com and we'll try to get there as fast as we can.
I want to leave us on one very, very important note.
Leprechaun.
What?
Leprechaun.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce that word. And if you're like us, you've never seen that word until today. Leprechaun. So, yay, Dungeons and Dragons for teaching us new words.
That's how I learned stuff. That's the only school, Dungeons and Dragons. There should be D&D class, though.
D&D school class? What would you talk about all day? What would the lessons
You play D&D.
How to stop being so basic?
How to not be a basic bee?
Yeah. You know, so, you know, yeah, either way. So, let's get back to the show.
Bye.
So, welcome back from the break. We're now going to go over the races that are going to appear in the Ben Richards Guide to Ravenloft. They're still in Under the Arcana, so they can still change before then, since it is May before those come out, so who knows?
Yeah, but currently, these are what they are. Twice between the worlds of the living and the dead, the appears retain their grip on life. You're endlessly tested by vicious warriors. Your ties to the undead grant the appears a taste of a vampire's deathless prowess in the form of a creased beak, dark vision, and a light-draining bite. With unique insights into the nature of the undead, many Dampiers turn to the lives of adventurers and monster hunters. The reasons are often deeply personal. Some see danger, managing monsters as personifications of their own hunger. Others pursue vengeance against whatever turned them into a Dampier. Others embrace the solitude of the hunt, striving to distance themselves from those who tempt their hunger.
So Dampier hunters. Every Dampier knows a thirst slacked only by the living. This desire is a whisper in the mind, a tinge in the sight, a reflex constantly needing to be suppressed. Those who overindulge in their thirst risk losing control and forever viewing others as their prey. Those who resist might find exceptional ways of controlling their urges or suppress it through constant molecular grinding. Molar grinding restraint. In any case, temptation haunts the Dampiers, and circumstances conspire to give them endless reason to indulge. While many Dampiers thirst for blood, your character might otherwise gain assistance from the living. Roll on or choose an option from the Dampier hungers they will determine what tempts your character to feed. So when you roll a d8, you can either, your hunger can either be blood, flesh or raw meat, cerebral spinal fluid, estrogenic humors, psychotic energy, a color from one's appearance, dreams, or life energy.
Wait, what's it mean by esoteric humors? Let's look that up real quick, because I actually don't know.
More effective in school.
Yeah, I mean, it's just proof that our, you know, education.
Intended for or likely to be understood by only a small number of people with specialized knowledge or interest.
Okay, so very specific, quirky thing, basically.
Yeah, it's like our humor. We're very specific in our humor. A lot of people like our humor.
There you go.
I don't know.
Which we'll explain our numbers. All right, Dampier origins. Dampiers often arise from encounters with vampires, but all manners of macabre bargains, necromantic influences, and encounters with mysterious immortals might have transformed your character. The Dampier origins table provides suggestions of how your character gained their lineage. Dampier origins table. 1. You are the reincarnation of an ancestor who was a vampiric tyrant. 2. Your pact with a predatory deity, fiend, fae, or spirit causes you to share their hunger. 3. You survived being attacked by a vampire, but were forever changed. 4. A parasite inhabits your body. You indulge your hunger to sate it. It's like a really bad tapeworm. You loved an immortal and were willing to be transformed into a vampire to join them, but tragedy interrupted the transformation. So, that's sad.
Romantic love story,
I think. Yeah, but tragic. You are a diminished manifestation of an otherworldly being. Slaking your hunger hastens your renewal. So, you're just a really crappy version of something more powerful. 7. You don't know your origins, but you were raised by vampires or other monsters. So that's, once again, that nature over nurture over nature kind of thing. There was a really good episode of Supernatural that actually went into that one time. It was pretty good. 8. A radical experiment changed your body, making you reliant on others for vital fluids. So that's more of your mad scientist vampire, or dampier, I should say. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's like very, man,
bats. Yeah. So, like, and there's, and how you combine those can help get you to all kinds of different kinds of freaky deaky undead slash living things. So, let's go over the Dampier traits. Alright, so speed, your base walking speed is 35, which is a nice little boost. You have the 2-in-1 ability score increase system.
Combat, one of the language.
Your creature type is both humanoid and undead.
So if an effect works on at least one of a creature's type, the effect works on that creature. For example, if you're both humanoid and undead, cure wounds works on you since the spell works on humanoids.
Your size is either medium or small, you choose a humanoid lineage. You have a dark vision of 60 feet. You also have spider climb, a climbing speed equal to your walking speed. In addition, at third level, you can move up, down, and across vertical surfaces and upside down along ceilings while leaving your hands free.
That's just fun.
Yeah, you can walk, like, on a ceiling.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, somebody walking in your house and you're a dampier, and they're like, oh, hey, I'm here to stop by, and you're like, cool, and you're just on the ceiling reading a book.
You just walk PC back and forth like a crazy person. Read a book the entire time.
How about the Prothea theory here, for, although the how you have some range, it might be a cramped ceiling.
It might be really good too if you're trying to get that really, really good shot, but you just can't get it without being up in the corner. So you can have a
Spider-Man.
Your dampier with a iPhone in the corner.
Be a photographer.
Yeah.
When you have that one corner that just looks great in any shop, but you can't get there, you just have to just see
you call up your dampier buddy. Hey, buddy.
The apparent bite, your fang bite, is a natural weapon which counts as a simple melee weapon, but which you are proficient. You add your constitution modifier to the attack and damage rolls when you attack with your bite. Your bite deals 1d4 piercing damage on hit, but you are missing half or more of your hit points to advantage on attack rolls to make with this bite. When you use this bite to hit a creature that isn't a construct or an undead, you can empower yourself in one of the following ways of your choice. So you gain hit points equal to the damage dealt by the bite, or you gain bonus to the next ability check or attack roll you make. The bonus equals the damage dealt by the bite, and you can empower yourself with your bite a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and gain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
So there's a lot of mostly combat reasons. I mean, there's some obvious roleplay instances where this is interesting, but it would suggest you use your constitution, like you would have a high constitution modifier, which makes the damp here feel like it would be really good for spell casting.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get a bonus from this as well. But since it gives you advantages to hit if you're missing, you know, half or more of your hit points, it could also be very good for the rogue. Because you can always get that sneak attack damage in there.
Sneak, sneak, sneak.
And since that adds damage to the hit, that's going to increase the amount of hit points you get back. So you can do a sneaky bite. So that's kind of fun.
Now if you sneak around the log, you can go and bite something.
Exactly. You sneak around the log and you sneak attack the halfling. And you too can kill Willow. Sneaking around the rock.
That's just a chill. Just a chill.
It's never gonna go away, yeah.
Yeah, you'll
That's
always.
Why Emma just embraced it.
It's going on a t-shirt.
If we ever do merch, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going on a hoodie or a t-shirt.
Yeah.
So, next we have the Hexblood.
Where wishing fails, ancient magic can offer a heart's desire at least for a time. Hexbloods are individuals infused with eldritch magic, fey energy, or mysterious witchcraft. Some enter into the bargains with hags, gain their deepest wishes, but eventually find themselves transformed. These changes evidence a hag's influence. Ears that split into 4 points, skin in wild shades, lengthy hair that regrows if cut, and a removable living crown. Along with these marks, Hexbloods manifest hag-like traits such as long life, dark vision, and a variety of magical methods to beguile the senses and to avoid the same. While many Hexbloods gain their lineage after making a deal with a hag, others reveal their nature as they age, particularly if a hag influenced them early in life or even before their birth. Many Hexbloods turn to lives of adventure, seeking to discover the mysteries of their magic to forge a connection with their fey natures, or to avoid the hag that obsesses over them.
The era of hags. Normally, hags create more of their kind through creation of hexbloods. Every hexblood exhibits features suggestive of the hag who magic inspires her powers. This includes an unusual crown, often called an elder cross or a witch's turban. This living garland-like part of the hexblood body centers their temples and wraps behind their head, serving as a visible mark of the bargain between hag and the hexblood, a debt owed, or change to come.
Like this?
Yeah, that would be one, yeah. It's like, you know how on tieflings, how they always have they show out of one of the crown of horns that goes back?
Yeah.
Hexbloods are similar to that.
Oh.
It might just be like.
I kept thinking, like, all night, like.
Yeah, it can be just like, it can be like a goat's horns or something like that. But it can also just be a bone, protruding bone shape as well. There's lots of different ways to interpret it, and there's a lot of different versions. So if you just look at some of the Amy Brown art or Terry Dizzatelli stuff,
yes, I know those people.
Yeah, you can see their stuff.
Becoming a hag. Hags can undertake a ritual to irreversibly transform the hexblood they create into a new hag, either one of their own kind or that embodies the hexblood nature. This requires both the hag and the hexblood to be in the same place and in constant Consent's the lengthy ritual. Circumstances most Hexblades shun, but might come to accept in the first centuries. Once a Hexblade undergoes this irreversible ritual, they emerge as a hag NPC no longer under the control of the Hexblade player unless the DM rules otherwise.
And so that lends itself to the when they were talking about how hags will make the Hexbloods, and that, like, as a Hexblood, you might become an adventurer to get away from the hags because they want you to become a hag, mm-hmm. essentially. And
do you like charm you and then have you do the ritual as you're charmed?
No, because that's not real consent.
It's not a real consent, yeah. But if they threaten to kill your family, that's still consent.
Which is sadly true.
Yeah, it's under what, there's a word for it, but...
Like?
Duress, there we go. If you're under duress, you can still give consent. It's immoral, but these are hags, so expect it.
It's basically just run away because they can't threaten you if you can't hear them.
Exactly. They can find ways to manipulate you. So your best bet is to kill your entire family.
No. Oh my God.
That's right. Yeah.
As soon as you make a friend with somebody, kill them right in the heart.
Hey, you're a really nice dude.
I'm saying, waitress, I appreciate you refilling my drink a third time, but now you have to die.
Come off the head.
Off with their head. Great customer service deserves pain.
Hexblood origins. Oh, God. A bargain with a hag or other eerie forces transform your character into a magical being. Roll on or choose an option from the Hexblood origin table to determine how your character gained their lineage.
Okay, so there's a lot of these origin tables. Is this happening before?
Nope.
No, it didn't happen as much as the other ones. It was because these are so open-ended. These particular ones.
Yes.
They give you lots of options.
Yeah. So the hunger is seeking a child. Your parent made a bargain with a hag. You're the result of that arrangement. Fake kidnapper swapped you, and your parents shut.
Okay. The changeling idea from Fae Origins, not the changeling race, but.
Yeah.
A coven of hags lost one of their members. You were created to replace the lost hag.
You were cursed as a child, and you were experienced from the force and from the bad blood, now free of the curse.
So that one's a little different. So you're going to have more of that nature-y look and feel to you, and you're more fae-like. But you probably won't be having hags chase after you as much.
Which is nice.
Which is good.
You began life as a fake creature, but an accident or crime changed you and forced you from your home.
Yeah, same situation. A slighted druid transformed you and bound you to live only so long as a sacred tree bears fruit. So that's a fun little curse, especially from a druid, actually. I like that. That's a fun origin.
You made a deal with a hag. They twisted your words and transformed you. You are a child of the wild. Animals and mysterious whisperers were the only family you ever knew.
And then, of course, they point out you can do something completely different if you want to. But that was just kind of their good way of, like, good suggestions to start
with. Ways to get inspiration and that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have standard 30 speed. You get to increase ability scores 1x2 and then about 1x1, one extra language, you're humanoid and fae, you choose medium or small.
Your vision is 60 feet, and you have fae resilience. You have advantage on saving throws and make to avoid or have a charmed condition on yourself.
Hex magic. You can cast a disguise self and hex spells with this trait. Intelligence, wisdom, or charisma is your spellcasting ability for these spells. Choose when you gain this lineage. Once you cast either of these spells with this trait, you can't cast a spell with it again until you finish a long rest. You can also cast these spells using spell slots you have.
spells. That's a good feature.
Yeah.
Magic token. As an action, you can harmlessly pull out one of your nails, a tooth, or a lock pair. This token is imbued with magic, so you finish a long rest. All tokens imbued in this way, you can use an action to send a telepathic message to a creature holding or carrying that token, as long as you are in the same plane of existence and within 10 miles of it. This message can contain up to 25 words. In addition, and while you are within 10 miles of the token, you can use an action to enter a trance for 1 minute, during which you can see and hear from the token as if you were located where it is. As while you are using your senses at the token's location, you're blind and deaf in regards to your own surroundings. Afterwards, the token is harmlessly destroyed. Once you create a token using this feature, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, at which point your missing part regrows.
Yeah, so that just adds to the creepiness of this particular kind of character.
I love your reaction.
Oh, just pulling out a fingernail? I mean, or a tooth? Like, can you imagine just like walking up to somebody like, here, take this.
Oh, you also
give a bloody tooth in their hand. Well, yeah, but who's going to do that?
Most people like the same.
That would be the normal thing to do.
But this is D&D.
Locking hair is easy.
I need to show you this one. This is for a later conversation. Later I need to show you this anime where this girl pulls out all of her fingernails.
It's
great!
Any other note you guys want to talk about? With
Dad hates pulling out fingernails and it's hilarious.
Well, I like that the magic token gives you some social interaction options.
Yep.
And some extra,
yeah.
Exploration kind of things. Because you can sneak that on to somebody. It doesn't have to say they're willing.
Yeah.
So you can, figure out some way to tuck a lock of hair in someone's.
Or a tooth.
Or a tooth. And then under somebody's pocket or whether. You won't be able to see that much, but you'll be able to hear quite a bit. And that has some extra as to it that I like that they just have. The hex one itself makes for an interesting background.
I love how creepy it is, honestly.
Yeah.
Pulling out your tooth.
Yeah. There's a certain intimidation factor that you can just use on somebody when you just walk up and rip out one of your teeth and hand it to somebody.
And the next time you see them, it's back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, pull out your front tooth and be all like,
I like the intimidation factor you talked about, just ripping out your tooth, or just your nail. Like, imagine how hard it is to rip out your nail.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Well, it's more of a mental thing, I assume. I'm sure, most people have the strength to, pull out a tooth, it's really hard to...
I mean, come on, everybody can bite off their own thumb if they can.
Yeah, but most people don't do that. Most people don't do that. But the hex one?
Do you see the stub?
I can't imagine pulling out your own nail, especially when you have short nails. I can imagine it when you have long nails. Yeah.
That was just great, I assume.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've almost pulled off my nail before.
Well, there you go.
I've brushed my nail before.
Actually broken
it down
before.
That's
sad because I
don't remember about my nail. I remember I was younger, we just got the big chairs, so I was kind of used to them. And I just crushed my big nail.
Me and your father are very proud of you. That was my
We had a really deep conversation about fingernails for the last 5 minutes.
Because it's so interesting!
So anyway, let's go to Reborn.
Death isn't always the end. The Reborn exemplify this, being individuals who have died, yet somehow still live. Some Reborn exhibit the scars of fatal fates, their ashen flesh, missing limbs, or bloodless veins, making it clear they've been touched by death. Other Reborn are marvels of magic or science being stitched together from desperate beings or bearing mysterious minds and manufactured bodies. Whatever the origin, Reborn know a new life and seek experiences and answers all their own.
Faded memories. Reborn suffer from some manner of discontinuity an interruption of their lives, or a physical state that their minds are ill-equipped to deal with. Their memories of events before this interruption are often vague or absent. Occasionally, the most unexpected experiences might cause sensations or visions of the past to come rushing back. Rather than sleeping, reborn regularly sit and dwell on the past, hoping for some revelation of what came before. Most of the time, these are dark, silent stretches. Occasionally, though, in a moment of peace, stress, or excitement, a reborn gains a glimpse of what came before. When you desire to have such dreamlike vision, go on the Lost Memories table to inspire its details. And remember to cue the soap opera moment of music that happens. Because the reborn are built in with amnesia.
Why don't we just say amnesia, though?
Because it's not exactly amnesia, but they're basically, it's a giant amnesia trope.
Yes, yeah, so Lost Memory Table. We call this is a painful moment, what marks a scar in your body to relate to. Ooh, a memory causes you to shed a tear, is a bitter or cheerful memory. Does recalling it make you feel the same way? You recall a childhood memory about the event or who you were so influences you. A memory brings with it the voice of someone that was once close to you. How did they advise you?
You recall enjoying something that you can't stand doing now. What is it? Why don't you like it now?
A memory carries a vivid smell or sensation. What are you going to do to recreate that experience?
You faintly remember a place that couldn't possibly exist. What is this vision? How does it make you feel?
You experience a memory that you're certain isn't your own. How does it seem unnatural? Could be a glimpse of a past nightmare or something worse?
I feel like these are therapist questions.
Yeah, I mean, these are actually very interesting questions in general.
Yeah.
That for any kind of character who has had some kind of memory loss or something like that, it's a good table to remember and come back to at some point.
Good. And also, you have your reborn origins. You know, reborn my regime from circumstances similar to those of various undead or constructs. Go on or choose an option for reborn origins table to determine how your character gained their lineage.
You were magically resurrected with something that went wrong. Stitches bind your body's mismatched pieces, and your memories come from multiple different lives.
After clawing free from your grave, you realize you have no memories except for a single name.
Cliche?
Yeah.
You awoke in an abandoned laboratory alongside complex designs for clockwork origins.
You were necromancer's undead servant for years. One day, your consciousness returned.
You were released after being petrified for generations. Your memories have faded, though, and your body is not what it once was.
Oh, wait, hold up. Where did you get that, Tyler?
It was above the one you skipped. It was the one you skipped.
You actually skipped it, so
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Duh.
Your body hosts a possessing spirit that shares its memories and replaces your missing appendages with phantasmal limbs.
I like that.
In public, you pass as an unremarkable individual, but you can feel the itchy straw stuffing inside you.
Oh my god, that's creepy! I love it!
Yeah, there are so many really, really good Magic the Gathering images, card images, that would fit any of those. So, like, if you ever need some good art inspiration, I'd definitely look at some
artifact creatures. I'm not screwing that, I have three more inspiration for that.
A grave stitcher would be really good.
Yeah, or stuffy doll, and, you know,
I'm sorry, I am a giant emo nerd. I love anything dark.
Oh yeah, this...
This is, I want this!
Yeah.
Is this coming out with Kim?
No, it's coming out with Van Richten Sky. Remember, my character in Tyler's campaign is Reborn.
Yes, right.
Yeah, it's a different take on the Reborn, but it's
so we have to get Van Richten's.
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna get it, but... Okay. No worries about that.
I'm pretty sure I've already pre-ordered it.
I've already pre-ordered it.
Yeah.
Good. I already love it.
Oh, yeah. The book's going to be great.
Yeah.
So crazy. I'm pulling out your fingernail.
Yeah.
I'm moving back to the fingernail. Pulling out your fingernail. So cool.
Well, as reborn, you have the base, you know, 30 walking speed, 1 square increased by 2, different 1 by 1. You get common 1 other language. You get to be humanoid and also get to choose between construct or undead.
Yeah, and that's gonna affect a lot about what makes your character what they are. Like, okay, for the one character we were just talking about, I made a character that was kind of like a halfling or a gnome, but it was a reborn. You know, with a constructed version, so it's more like robotic in a way. But we don't really know what it is, and that's kind of a cool backstory that's kind of left there. And I like it; it's fun.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
right. Because my character was supposed to know.
Yeah, your character wasn't supposed to know, but it's
I don't know.
It's like the idea behind that character is that it keeps getting reset as it goes through and learns everything. The memories all get taken by something, and then it gets reset. And so it's...
Oh, I'm going to go through meeting you again? Ugh.
Maybe. Or as a character, I could basically just use in any campaign ever I wanted to, because it could be the same character, just reset.
True.
New class, new...
Okay, so you're...
Subclass, everything.
So it chooses a new class every time it resets.
Yeah, it's a learning thing. Yeah. Somebody wants to use it for learning. Who knows why? That's the mystery of it.
I'm sorry, that person, whatever they're learning is how to get drunk. My centaur?
No, they're learning about that from a centaur, yes. Alright, so your size is going to be medium or small. You have the dark vision of 60 feet. Because whether you're a construct or an undead, it really does make sense. You have the deathless nature. With deathless nature, you have escaped death. A fact represented by the following benefits. You have advantage on saving throws against disease and being poisoned, and you have resistance to poison damage. You have advantage on death saving throws. You don't need to eat, drink, or breathe. And you don't need to sleep, and magic can't put you to sleep. You can finish a long rest in 4 hours if you spend those hours in an inactive, motionless state during which you retain consciousness. So that's a lot of the similar traits to the
elf.
The Warforged and the and the elf as well, but like there's that, which that's like the main part of it, and then I like this ability too, knowledge from the past.
You temporarily remember sporadic glimpses of the past, perhaps faded memories from ages ago or a previous life. When you make an ability check that uses a skill, you can roll a d6 and add the number rolled to the check. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
That is really good.
It's a really subtle but powerful ability that lends itself to social interaction and exploration moments. And I really enjoy that. Like, it makes the character feel really good. And it's not just a combat-based kind of thing. I like everything about it. There's a lot of different takes you can do. Frankenstein's monster is obviously one take. Like the Stitchers and Innistrad in the Magic the Gathering universe, they make zombies. Well, if one of those zombies that they made was able to retain its own, like, you know, economy.
Oh. Imagine a D&D group where one was a Stitcher, one was one of the Stitcher zombies.
That gained its own sentience and autonomy. It could be really interesting, right?
Oh, I know a while ago you were planning on like a planeswalker campaign in an MLB1, and I wanted to be a Stitcher, or you said you wanted like the first session was like it'd be one player's journey, while the other one would be like a sidekick.
Yeah.
The sidekick that I play could be the zombie of Bruce.
Exactly. It could be a reborn, you know. You can do, there's a lot of different things you can do with it. Okay, and then the last thing they introduced was custom lineage. I'm not sure if that's supposed to pop up in Van Richten's guide or it's just a general UA. What's that?
Custom lineage is from Tasha's.
Oh, custom lineage is from Tasha's?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, then it doesn't matter. We're leaving.
All right. Well, no, that was the only race that was added in Tasha's, so we might as well bring it up. So it's not going to fit anywhere else conveniently. Alright, so creature type, you are a humanoid. That's all there is to it.
Yes. For small or medium, you get one ability score increased by 2. You gain upbeat, you gain either dark vision to a range of 60 feet or proficiency in one skill of your choice, and common one other language.
So it's a lot like the variant human.
Yeah. It's better than the variant human.
But
it's very short and simple.
If you want dark vision, it's going to be better than the variant human. And it's a pretty powerful. It kind of lets you just make whatever you want. And that's kind of where they were going with these other races in a way. But, you know, it is pretty basic. But it just allows you to do anything you want. I really think that if they come up with some more feats, or if somebody else makes a bunch of feats that have some animalistic traits or just basic, like, move abilities or something like that, that you can choose as a feat.
There should be some possibilities feats.
Yeah, that would make it work better, because there's not that many feats that really lend themselves to custom lineage very well. To at least add flavor to it. So, it's just there. You don't have to be human. Who wants to be human anyways?
Gross.
So,
basically,
on that note,
you're a human for every other race.
Exactly.
Any race you want to be.
So, that gives you all the options in the world to do pretty much whatever you want, which is fun. So, I think that's about it on the newest races in D&D.
Yeah.
5e, that is. Hope you had a good time. See you next time.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, I want your input. No, I want to end this on.
Never mind.
Born, exhibit the scars of fate. Tall fate.
Wow. That's a... Ouch.
Yeah! No, you can see how I'm having trouble.
Yeah, no, I
can't.
They
need to rewrite this. They just... Hair of hags.
Air.
One... I said hair.
It's air of hags.
Hair.
Yeah, like
air.
Gas.
Like...
Hair.
Hair. Like A-I-R.
So.
Hair.
Hair of hags.
Not hair. Air. Hair. Hair of hags.
It's the same thing.
No. Hair and air are two different words.
Yeah, one's a
hair
gas and one's the...
No, the hair of hags is the stuff that keeps growing back. It's the stuff that, like, you know, gets in your soup when you're not paying attention. And it's the stuff that's in between your teeth because you're a weirdo.
The air of hags is very small gas.
It's the people who inherit the qualities of a hag.
Hair. I'm not doing this on purpose. I'm not like Tyler. This is me actually. That's hair.
It's air. Just say air.
Hair to the throat. Hex magic. You cast the die. No, you do it.
They can't see that, but
it was epic. Yeah, I noticed.
My moy is everywhere.
You're making me laugh. We're trying to be serious.
Just say air.
Yeah, don't read the word. Just say the word air.
Yeah,
air. Air.
You know how to say the word air, like the
air.
Yeah. Just pronounce just and remember C-H-E-I-R. Just say air. As in air to the throat. The H is silent.
Okay, let's... And one. Oh, are you okay?
She's broken.
Okay.
Hair!
Hey, okay, so, one, and a two, and
Anyways, survey one exhibits a scans.
It's reborn here. We did a CT scan on him. He seems to be, well, not living.
Jesus.
The scans of the reborn. This here is just a scan of the reborn behind. Because he decided to sit on top of the here copy machine. And whoo, whoo, whoo. Hey, she's broken, dude. She just broke her own brain.
I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I hate you.
You love us.
I hate you.
You love us.
You probably just want to start over on that one.
I'm going to start over.